So warm greetings to all of you as I begin this talk. There is a renowned verse from the Dhammapada, the ancient anthology of Buddhist poetry verse, and it goes something like this. Hate is not overcome by hate. But by love alone is hate overcome. This is an ancient truth. So hate is not overcome by hate. By love alone is it overcome. And it's possible that translating the ancient word as love doesn't really capture the full richness of this verse, and I'll talk about that a little later. But I want to evoke this very, well-known verse, that it's really a central idea in Buddhism, that we cannot pacify hate by adding more hate to the fire. Hate is considered to be a fire that burns the one who's hating, that harms the one who's hating. So to respond to hate with hate means that there's two people now who are burning and suffering, who are wounding each other, wounding themselves, both. And this is such an important topic in the climate of the world, really. I don't know if there's more or less hatred in the world than there's ever been before. But we're certainly becoming acutely aware of it here in the United States. Perhaps we're coming into an era of this country where there is the possibility of beginning to recognize the tremendous harm that hate has, that maybe it was difficult to see before when the hate was expressed with, violently, that people are mostly spending their time protecting themselves from lynching and riots and all kinds of things. And hate was certainly present back then, but maybe it was not what was being addressed directly. But now we've come to a time where there's a real heightened sensitivity to what hatred looks like, how hatred speaks, how it spreads as a kind of poison through our society. And I speak about this because of, in the wake of the rising hate crime against Asian Americans. Here in California, just a month ago, there was a arson and vandalism of a Asian Buddhist temple in Los Angeles. A Japanese Buddhist temple, the Pure Land tradition of Buddhism, a very peaceful, peace-loving form of Buddhism. And the temple was partly destroyed, not dramatically, but enough to be quite disturbing. This is a tradition of Buddhism where it has been in this country for well over 100 years. It's possible that membership of their temple is, or at least of that form of Buddhism, their members have been here in the United States for six, seven, it's possible even eight generations by now. And to be the recipient of hate as if they don't belong in this country is quite painful for all of us in this family that we hope to be in this country. And so in some of these images we've seen of elderly Asian Americans being attacked on streets, right here in San Francisco is one of them. And it's not like over there that this kind of violence happens, but it's close in. And it's it didn't start then, but it certainly raised people's worry. A year ago, when there started to be hateful things said to people of Asian descent, especially Chinese descent, here locally in the peninsula, because of the coronavirus. And somehow, spreading of animosity towards people of any kind of Asian descent because of a virus like this. So there's ease in which sometimes people hate is part of the issue here in this country. And certainly there's a need to stand in solidarity with the people who are the recipients of hate, and certainly to stand in solidarity with the Asian Americans who are struggling with this and with fear and worry and about what it means to be out in public even, or out in public at night, and we know what's coming. And to offer our protection and to create places of sanctuary where it feels safe to come, and not just welcome to come, but feeling like it's home, like they belong. And it's a little bit hard here at IMC to be maybe teaching here all alone this last year. But, I want this place to be a home for all people and for everyone to come here to feel like they belong. And even not just welcome, not just belonging, but feel like it's their place where they can really engage fully and bring themselves completely here. So, certainly I'm concerned for the membership of IMC that are Asian American, the membership of IMC that are Black, and all the people who have been the recipients of hate crimes here in the United States. The word hate crime is an interesting term because the definition of hate in this regard is different, very different than some of the other meanings of hate and that when we use the word hate. When people say that they hate spinach, it has a very different connotations, very different meaning of the word than when we say we hate an ethnic group or we hate one of the I think the highest number of hate crimes in the United States is against African Americans. And one of the other really high numbers is LGBTQ. So when there's a hate crime, it's not just, that a dislike of someone. But one distinction some people make also between like anger and hate, or hate as a hate crime, is that anger is for a particular behavior, particular event, particular situation, whereas racial hate or gender hate or ethnic hate or something, it's hate towards a whole category, the whole person. Not the behavior of the person, what they say or do, but the whole being of the person, and their family and their community. And so it's not just a singular emotion, but it's an attitude, a disposition, a way of seeing. It's an interpretation that's overlaid on the totality of who a person is. And that's why hate crimes and expressions of this kind of ethnic and category crimes, that's so total, why it's so difficult for people and so painful, is because it's a diminishment, a contempt of who they are as a human being. And to have that repeatedly, to be recipient that you as a human being are somehow worthy of my hate is quite difficult. And then to know that that's a lingering disposition, a lingering attitude, it stays, means that, you know, it's not just a mistake of the moment or an incident of the moment, passion in the moment, but it's something that stays and will be here and continue and continue. And to be the recipient of the victim of hate crimes, it's not just the individual who suffers, but also the families and the community, because it's known that it's in some ways related to all those together. So it's really a fabric, a tear in the fabric of society. It's a rupture in our ability to be together cooperatively, harmoniously, as fellow citizens, fellow companions in our humanity. It's also kind of a diminishment of people's humanity. And this is one of the great tasks, I think, of our society and for ourselves and our times, is to learn how to see the humanity of other people and how to share our humanity with other people. I saw an interview recently of an imam, a religious leader of a mosque, and the neighbor of the mosque, a man who had been high on drugs, heard about some violence. I think it was the Paris shooting massacre, where at least people died in Paris by some ISIS kind of followers. And he came home high on cocaine, and was just, you know, angry at Muslims. They're all, his idea was that he said he had been listening to a lot of social media, and so he thought that all Muslims were somehow violent and terrorists and terrible people. And so he shot up the building next door to the mosque, and no one was hurt, but still he shot at it. So he was arrested and went to jail and for what he did, and he apologized for what he did, and you know, I think when he was no longer high, he understood what he had done and the mistake, huge mistake he had made. And when he apologized, the people in the mosque, the religious leaders of the mosque, forgave him and apparently brought him food or little gifts in the prison. And when he was released, because he lived next door, they invited him over to the mosque and they were able to tell him a little bit about what their form of Islam was. And he was shocked. He found these people to be fantastic, wonderful people and peace-loving people and who had forgiven him. And then he brought his friends over and to see them. And they were all kind of discovering the humanity of each other, sharing each other's humanity, getting to know each other, which is not so easy, not so possible when there's hate, not possible when there's that categorical idea that someone is somehow contemptible. And so how do we respond to hate as individuals and society? And from a Buddhist point of view, we don't respond with more hate. And so to take a lot of care, it's hard to avoid doing that. It's hard not to be upset with them, those people who are doing it. Of course there should be, of course they shouldn't be. Of course we should take a strong stand against the acts of violence, against these acts of this level of hate. And hopefully stand up and help protect our fellow humans who are struggling with this kind of situation. It affects all of us. But we shouldn't hate. And so in this Dhammapada verse, it says, hate is not overcome by hate. And common translation is, by love alone is hate overcome. But the actual language of the original language of the line, it literally says, by non-hate is hate overcome. And so non-hate is a larger category, larger, points to a wider range of responses than love. Love maybe is too hard, too difficult to draw up love and expect we're always supposed to be loving, and maybe it's not even appropriate as the first response or as a response in situations of hate. And so the question is, what does non-hate mean? And most literally, it means not to hate. And so the idea of loving, I think, is a great one. And the motivation to love, it can arise out of deep meditation practice. In meditation practice, where we let go, we quiet all the fevers of greed, hate, and delusion, we settle and discover a deep level of peace and well-being within, a settled, peaceful, contented, reassured heart. We discover that there is a way of living, a way of being, that becomes more important, like one of the most precious things that how to live. There can be a feeling of kindness, love, friendliness, compassion that radiates from within. And we say, this feels like home. This has integrity. This is the place of value of how to live this life. And then to feel a commitment that this is how I want to be. And so what can exist rather than being loving, there can be the wish to be loving. We can't always love, but maybe we can always have the aspiration to love. And sometimes that aspiration to love means that the best we can do at today is not to give in to our hate, our hostility. Maybe not giving in to hate, maybe the wish to love, commits us to pausing, sacred pause, to hold in check any movement we have to hate. We hold in check our tongue and don't speak words of hostility. We hold our hands in check to not express any physical expressions of hostility. That this learning to hold ourselves back because we want to love, it's not a kind of repression, but rather it's a kind of expression of something that's deeper that wants to come out. Something deeper that's saying, wait, hold it. There's something more important here. Don't lose yourself. Don't give in to something which adds to fragmentation, alienation. Don't give in to something that's going to burn yourself. That some of the dramatic images of hate and metaphors for hate in Buddhism is that of a poisonous snake which is biting itself, or that of a fire that is burning itself when it burns. So hate, the fire of hate burns the person who is hating. The poison of hate poisons the person who hates. And one of the dynamics of hate is that for sometimes hate is a person's response to their own pain, their own hurt. And it's often said that that hurt can evoke hate, a kind of blaming others and trying to avoid the pain we feel ourselves by attacking other people and blaming other people and turning the attention outward. So hurt can evoke hate. But then hate, in return, evokes hurt. And then you see there comes in a vicious cycle. One leads to the other, round and round, and gets stronger and stronger. Hate evokes alienation. And alienation is a condition that promotes more hate. That when we end up hating, we're separating ourselves from the humanity of other people. And then we're more alone. Unless we then find companionship in other people who hate, and we think we're connected then in the mutual cause of hate, what we're hating. But it's not really a very deep connection. It's a shallow connection. And to get somehow supported or feel enlivened by hate is a kind of self-alienation. And the more we're alienated from others and alienated from ourselves, then the more the more that drives further hate. Hate brings alienation, and alienation promotes even more hate. In Buddhist language, Buddhist ideas, hate is a form of bondage. And to be free, to freely, do the wishes of our jail keepers or jailers, is not real freedom. So to have the freedom to express the hate and feel be free and wonderful to express it freely, is really doing the work of our jailers. It's just enslaving us or jailing us more and more in bondage. That people who are hating are in fact caught and diminishing themselves and jailing themselves in these very strong feelings. To find freedom is to find freedom from hate. To find the ability to allow something that's deeper than hate to come forth and move through us. And so for those of us who are practitioners, one of the great possibilities for us is not to diminish ourselves because we might feel hate, or we might feel animosity, or we might feel have prejudice and bias, but rather to turn the light of awareness on that, to really be honest about that, learn to see it and recognize it in whatever form it takes, our anger, our hostility, even to anything, to keep turning back 180 degrees away from the object of our hostility, our prejudice, our bias, to what it's like for us to have the bias, the prejudice, the hostility, or even the intense hatred that occasionally can exist. And really be honest about it and see it. And if we want to love ourselves, then we want to have the sacred pause and don't give into it, but look at it deeper and deeper and deeper. What's going on here? And then to see, find by and bring with that the awareness that's calming, the awareness that is peacemaking. The awareness is not hating or in conflict, non-contentious awareness. So we can start relaxing and settling the fires, relaxing the hurt, the alienation, relaxing the way in which we recoil from pain, feel our own pain deeper and deeper until we find where the healing is, where the where there is peace, where there's wholeness, maybe where there is love. And we discover that when we respond to hate in the world with non-hate, that maybe it takes the form of generosity, sending presents, meals to someone in prison who hated us. Maybe it takes the form of forgiveness. The imam who was talking about forgiving the man who shot at their mosque said it made sense to forgive him because he had apologized. And so to discover the ability to forgive, discover the ability to be friendly. We don't have to love someone to be friendly. And in all these expressions, maybe we do discover how to bring more love into the world. How we bring more of a peaceful, settling, pacifying presence into this world to benefit this world that's so challenging here. So I think one of the great tasks these days in the United States and perhaps many countries in the world, one of the great noble tasks, the important tasks, is for us to stand in solidarity with everyone who is a recipient of hate and hate crimes. the black people in the United States, the indigenous people, the Hispanics, the LGBTQ, the Asian Americans, and the list goes on and on. And also, but to really, more than just stand in solidarity and support, to be actively involved in making this world a better place and a safer place for all. And to understand as deeply as we can the roots of hate in ourselves, how this works, and to learn to develop the strength and the courage and the confidence to always wish, always want to be loving. It doesn't mean you have to be loving. It's a difficult task. But we can always want to do it. And in wanting to do it, maybe we pause, sacred pause, to avoid causing more harm. And we at least don't express actively our hostility to anyone. And maybe then, slowly, we can begin learning how really to meet the challenges of this world with expressions, ways of being and loving and caring and standing up and speaking up in ways that are going to heal the great divides of our society. Let's discover the common humanity of all of us, so that we don't live fractured, but we live together as a community, fellow, a family, a society that cares for each other. May all of us care for everyone we encounter. Thank you.